Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. Good evening, Richard.
Good evening.
How is life in California?
Life is good. Yeah, life is good. The weather's been great.
All right. Actually, I just saw something today on the when driving that may be interesting. The as of the first of the year, talking on your cell phone when you're driving in your car in Nevada can get you a fine of up to $250. Now, locals here know that because there's been plenty of notice that this is coming, but a lot of our listeners live out of state and come in and rent a car and may or may not know that. So
I noticed last week when I drove in, there was one of those big electronic signs on the freeway that was announcing, you know, that they had that law. We have that law in California as well. So
I don't see how $250 is really going to dissuade anybody very seriously, but $2,000 would do a better job at it, but oh well.
Hey, they take your license away and sometimes your car for drunk driving. People still do that, so some people there's, you know, just no saving.
Well, I got something for my car, so I can this little voice box that seems to work pretty good.
You know, the studies have shown that even with a hands-free device, you are more distracted talking on the phone. So I really try not to do it. I really make an effort not to answer the phone when I'm driving. I mean, sometimes I do, but I really try not to.
I agree, and it's funny. When I'm in the passenger seat and Shirley is talking on the phone, it drives me crazy. Just go, oh, cut out that conversation. Cut out that. Stop. But when I'm doing, it's like, oh, this is no big deal. So, okay, oh, well.
Hey, I want to correct something from last week.
Okay.
We were talking about Intrade and betting on, like, presidential elections.
Yes.
And I said that Intrade was at a university in Iowa, and that was not correct. Intrade is based in Ireland.
Well, they both start with an I, so that ought to count.
Well, no, before there was Intrade, the first electronic futures market in the United States is at the University of Iowa, and it's called the Iowa Electronic Market. And it is still in existence, but Intrade has much higher limits. So, but they're basically an internet casino based in Ireland. It's funny, though, that we distinguish between futures markets where you can bet on things. I mean, because really it is just betting, whether it's the price of gold or a barrel of oil or a presidential election. Somehow that's different than the bookmaker who...
Well, the futures market is clearly the biggest casino in the world.
Yeah.
The I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I was no longer playing on Shirley's card at Harrah's because I had heard that Harrah's was not liking that, and so I wasn't going to do that anymore. And so we got an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com and saying, well, what do you mean Harrah's doesn't like it anymore? What does that mean? And so I thought about it and go, well, I'm actually kind of repeating rumors that I have heard that other people have gotten restricted. I actually did get restricted from using her card in Harrah's Lake Tahoe, and then I stopped getting offers from there. I don't know if they're related or not. I tend to be paranoid about these things, partly because of my writing and stuff. I'm a famous, successful player, and I'm assuming in every casino there are at least some of the managers who would rather I not play there. and I don't want to give them any good excuse.
You know, I not only that, I mean, you know, normally I would say, why not call a host and ask them? But the problem is that often they don't know the real answer. I mean, casinos are big bureaucracies, and often one department will tell you one thing and another department will tell you something else, and you never really know what the right answer is.
Yeah, and it can vary between property to property. In Vegas, at Gold Coast, the GM has told me explicitly no ands, ifs, or but. If I play on Shirley's card, bad things will happen to me. I will not be welcome there to play anymore. At Sam's Town, which is a related property, the GM knows that I play on Shirley's card. So they're the same slot club, the same organizations, but different. They each have their different flavor on it. So sometimes a friend of mine was playing at M a couple days ago, and he told me he was playing on his wife's card, and I said, you best not do that. They don't like that around here. And so I've heard of players getting kicked out of that casino for playing on somebody else's card. So, all right, different subject. Fezzik. Fezzik is a sports bettor. In my LVA blog that comes out on Tuesday, a couple days ago, I wrote that he has a high percentage of wins. Something like 54% is his lifetime average. And so that makes it 108% game, not counting the VIG. And the VIG is critical. So I did not discuss that in the article. I have a quarter percent edge or half percent edge. And yet I thought I had a better chance of coming out ahead than he did. And the logic was I have like millions of bets and he has a few hundred. So although Fezzik saw the article before it ran, he started sending me stuff after it ran, kind of some corrections. And one of the things he said was intriguing to me. He wrote, quote, I would be willing to bet anyone that I could bet $1,000 on every side of every NFL game and wind up winning. I found that intriguing.
That is intriguing.
So like this weekend, the Saints are playing the 49ers in a playoff game. So what he said is he would be willing to bet $1,000 on the Saints and $1,000 on the 49ers in the same game and win. Now, there's a couple ways to do that, I guess. One is if you know everybody's price, and one of them's at 3 and one of them's at 3.5, maybe that's enough to do it. So you bet one way, one side at 3 and one side at 3.5. If you have a good sense of which way the betting is going to go, and so it might be a line might be 6 points now, but by the end, before the game, you think it will be 7.5. Then, now I can't do this, but he's experienced enough, it wouldn't surprise me that he could.
You know, I'm wondering if he could do this by himself, because to drive around to all the different sports books in Las Vegas, you know, and run in and out of the casinos and jump in your car and drive to the next place, you know, because lines can move very quickly. I mean, I understand the idea, right, that you're going to get different prices in different casinos and be able to bet both ways, you know, but to physically be able to do it, you know, that seems like it would be hard to do.
It does. And I, in the Michael Koenig book, where he basically was a runner for Billy Walters, although Billy Walters had a different name in the book, I think it was Rick Matthews, sometimes Koenig would sit in the sports book at Caesars or somewhere all day long waiting for once and watching the line, and if it went from 8 to 8.5, then he was going to jump on it. And if it didn't, so, and that was his job. So I don't know how many people Fezzik hires, if any. I don't know what kind of sources he has. But anyway, I found it intriguing. Part of it is it's $1,000. A bet is a relatively small amount, so most sports book are going to take that and more. I don't think he would make the same claim betting $20,000 aside, because their sports books, it's harder to get down on 20,000 than it is to get down on 1,000.
Right, right.
Yeah. Anyway, I found that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I found it interesting too. He also mentioned that, you know, I'm just looking at his email, and he said the old school dinosaurs say you can lose since you will only have maybe 50 bets in a year. He said that's ridiculous. It's not unusual to have 20 bets on one game. So, part of that is some of these places let you bet after the game while the game is in progress.
Right, the in-game betting.
Yeah, but also this idea that that you can somehow be behind because you're only making 50 bets in a year is really ridiculous. I mean, people that think that way don't understand gambling. You know, a bet with positive EV is a bet with positive EV, regardless of whether you get to make it only one time or a million times. It's still a good bet, you know.
Oh.
And just because you might be behind after making that one bet. So what, you know?
All right. I don't think that's the point of the argument, though. And the question is, are you going to be ahead for this year? And if you're only making 50 bets, you have a smaller chance of being ahead for this year, even if they each had a positive EV, than if you were making 3 million bets.
Of course. Sure.
So I think that's what the gist of that was all about. So, also last week, we talked about scouting. And scouting is when you go around to different casinos and look to see what they have. And so, how much time do you spend scouting, Munch? And what kind of scouting do you do?
Well, all my teammates out there are laughing, yelling at the radio. He's a lazy bum and he doesn't do any scouting. My current situation, just because of my family situation, I'm not playing as much as I used to, and so when I do go play, I have a specific game in mind that I know is already there that I'm going to play, that maybe I found or maybe someone else has already scouted. But that being said, when I am on the road, if I do go out, you know, I will spend probably more time scouting than playing. When I go into a casino, I will look at almost every game in the casino. And I won't cruise the video poker just because I don't know anything about video poker. But I will go look at probably every single table game in the casino because you just never know what you're going to find. And when you do find something, it can be extremely, extremely valuable.
And so what kind of so are you looking for dealer mistakes, dealer flashing cards? Are you looking for
Well, I'm looking for everything, actually. I'm looking for dealers that are making mistakes or that are sloppy, sure. But I'm also looking for new games or games that the casino might be dealing incorrectly just because maybe, you know, they're making a mistake. I mean, this has happened a lot where the casinos get a game and, you know, for example, there used to be a game that was popular called Double Exposure, where the dealer's uh-huh. whole card was dealt face up. And, in the very beginning, they were dealing at blackjack paid 3-2, and after it got pounded very strongly, most of the casinos then, they changed the rules so that blackjack paid even money. But it's not uncommon to walk into a casino and find a casino that hadn't changed it and or they didn't know any better and they were paying 3-2.
So you sit down.
Yeah, exactly. So you just never know what you might find. Somebody told me about a promotion recently where a casino was paying 40-1 on a straight up number on roulette.
Ah, where a fair bet would be 37-1.
Yeah, there are 38 numbers, and they were paying 40-1. So you know, there are a lot of people.
Would they allow you to bet $1,000 on all 38 numbers?
I don't know what the particular limits were, but it's just the point is you really need to go look at everything in the casino, you know, because who knows what you might find.
Good. Now, I want to talk about what you found in video poker scouting, because it's different. But right now, we have Don Johnson on the line.
Oh.
And so let's talk to our guest this week. Don Johnson got some publicity of earlier this, last year, three different casinos in Atlantic City paid him a total of $15 million, which was reported in the paper, and are the top scores at each place, and by some kind of a rebate program. And so he instantly became a hero to all of us, be able to squeeze that much money out of the casino. He also made the papers for buying a $200,000 bottle of champagne or some such number. So we're going to ask him about that too. Don Johnson, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you. A couple weeks ago, you were scheduled to be on, and apparently there was a foul-up. So what happened, and what are you going to do to make it up to us?
I don't think I can give you any blackjack tips. It sounds like you guys got this. You've got the game nailed already. I'm sorry. I tried to call in last time, and I could hear you guys, and then I kept losing the signal. We were calling in from a satellite phone, and I don't know how those things work, but we just couldn't keep the signal long enough to stay on the line.
You were at a casino high in the Himalayas on the satellite phone, eh?
Yeah, I wish they might be a lot nicer to me.
Yeah.
So
we wanted to ask you that, you know, the stories in the papers were, you know, he won $15 million. They mentioned kind of like three separate $5 million wins. How did this whole thing come about?
I think it all of that happened in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and it was by and large a byproduct of them just getting more and more aggressive with the games that they were offering because of the competition in surrounding states and a lot of competition within New Jersey itself. But you know, I played in New Jersey with a lot poor results for a number of years before that string of events happened. And a lot of that was a byproduct of overperforming. You don't win $15.1 million in a three-month period of time and not have some element of luck or chance involved in that. Yeah, they were offering a good game, but it wasn't that great of a game that you could make that kind of a score.
So, I mean, the papers made it sound like it happened in one weekend. So this was actually, first of all, was $15 million your net win and over three-month period?
It was over a three-month period, and they make it sound like the casinos are an ATM, and it's you know, we all know that they're not. There were some losses in there. I didn't disclose that to the paper. They seem to focus on the wins because that's what somebody had leaked the story within the casino industry, and they were able to look up. You know, they could see that the gross receipts that were going to the state were down by a certain amount, and they were able to attribute it to one or two players. I happen to be one of those two players that won a portion. The amount was more than the $15 million. I think it was 20-some million in total that was lost by the casinos to the public. And I don't want to mention the particular casino that leaked the story, but they were doing a quarterly report to Wall Street, and in their quarterly report they kept getting pounded as to why their quarter was so bad, and somebody just mentioned my name, probably thinking that I think it's like a podcast that they do to Wall Street, probably thinking that, you know, maybe it was a private conversation, and it wasn't a private conversation. It actually went out to the public.
So there was a rebate associated with this. Now, was that something they offered and you jumped on, or you kind of negotiated with them in order to get it? How did that work?
The discounts or rebates or adjustment to betting odds, whatever you want to refer to it as, are all negotiated up front. You know, relative to my negotiating them up front, it has a lot less than probably some of the professional guys that are out there playing blackjack in that. I do it because it's part of a requirement under the IRS code. IRS code requires that these things have to be pre-negotiated, these discounts, otherwise to become 1099-able income.
Oh, that's interesting. So, yeah. So if this if it were not negotiated and they gave you some money back, suddenly it would be income? Boy, that would be bad.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if it wasn't related directly to your gaming, then what was it? Was it a gift? Okay, you got to pay taxes on it.
Oh, okay.
So it's it has to be directly related to your activity as a gambler.
Right. Now
and then the other side of it is that I know other players that that get discounts out there. I mean, it's like if I'm going to go to the movies and somebody's offering me a 50% discount coupon walking in, well, of course I'm going to use it. I'm going to go see the movie anyway. And if I'm going to be out there gambling anyway, why should I not take advantage? If I'm going to play a big volume or big volume bets like this, then knowing that the casino has an edge over you anyway, why be totally reckless and not take advantage of a discount?
No, sure. That makes I would take anything they would give me. The newspapers made it clear that you were not counting cards. But I'm wondering if that's something that you ever have done in the past, and do you consider yourself to be an advantage player?
Well, I don't know what you guys define as an advantage player. I mean, I've got other friends out there that play different games of blackjack, and I've read a lot of these different articles there. And knowing what I know about card counting, I mean, you could train a monkey to count cards. It's not that difficult. But my belief is it doesn't get you all the way there, so why monkey around with it? It doesn't really make any sense. I think you'd have to develop a leather ass to sit there long enough to get an advantage often enough to make any serious money.
So you're willing to gamble. Let me ask you this. Do you play if you're not given a rebate just to gamble?
No.
Ah.
No, but there are different levels of motivation here. I mean, entertainment is one level of motivation for playing. Having a good time is another motivation for playing. I happen to like the game. It's another motivation for the entertainment value of it. But all those given all those things and knowing that the casino has a natural edge over you, why should I not take advantage of some of these discounts or a better odds game?
Oh, sure. Hey, you're preaching to the choir. We're all in agreement on that.
Yeah, nobody's questioning that you take what you can, but I think the question is, so it sounds like
you haven't asked for enough until you get a few no's from them, right? I mean,
right.
So when you're doing this, you were betting $100,000 a hand. Now, there are very few players who can do that without serious bankruptcy issues. So clearly you had some considerable wealth going in. So the $15 million was a life-changing amount to most of us. But for you, it probably not so much. It's nice, but you still live in the same house. You still do the same things.
Yeah, I don't drive a different car. I don't have a different home. I don't do much different than what I was doing before.
Did you have a specific win or loss figure, a quitting point that you were, did you say going in, I'm going to play until I either win X or lose Y?
No, I pretty much played, as far as the trop is concerned, I played until they didn't refill the tray. When they ran out of $25,000 chips, I quit. And the same thing at Caesar's Palace, Atlantic City. When they refused to refill the tray at $4.23 million, I says, okay, I guess I'll go up and go to sleep.
Oh, so those wins were in one sitting. They were not...
Those two were in one sitting. The $5 million one at the Borgata was, or 5-point whatever one at the Borgata was over, I think it was over three trips.
Huh.
So those don't sound like they have to do with the rebate, because those were winning trips, and the rebate only kicks in when you lose.
Exactly.
Right. What was your biggest losing trip?
Probably be, this may or may not have been during that period of time, but if I would have lost $1 million, then you get the 20% discount, $800,000. Whatever it would be relative to whatever the stop points were to get the 20%. And that's the key. I mean, if you look at the trop, now, they don't have those rules anymore. They've changed them. with the new management that's in there. They were all, and you tell me, you guys are the real experts at this. I mean, if you're offered a game, you're required to come in with $1 million, either it's front money or credit. I don't play on credit. I just post up. So you come in with your $1 million. They're going to give you $50,000 walking in promo chips to start out playing with. And they're going to give you a 20% discount, and the threshold's at $500,000. So, I mean, I don't need to be that much of a super genius to say, why would I ever lose more than the $500,000?
Right.
Well, I'm not sure. If tragedy strikes,
you, I mean, this is just me, you know, with as a looking at this, I'm just saying, okay, it seems to me like it's going to the racetrack and playing which is where my business really lies with the parimutuel wagering. It looks to me like I got almost a break-even game. They got a 2.53% edge, and let's see, they're going to offer me. I only got to bet 80 cents on the dollar to bet this even money shot. I can't get enough of those bets. I think. I mean,
right? Oh no. So James Grosjean wrote a paper about the optimal quitting points for loss rebates. Were you aware of the paper, and did you refer to it, or you just kind of winged it?
No, I've heard of those guys. I don't know that I've read his specific paper. I mean, I may have read some of those things, but then it gets back into, I mean, obviously, if there is an optimal quitting point, you wouldn't have gone for $5.8 million that night at the trough.
Well, that's true.
Your optimal number would have hit at some point long before you got to that number.
That's true. So tell us about this $200,000 bottle of champagne.
That got a little bit blown out of proportion. I mean, there's no denying that I was there, obviously. I saw the pictures online. I don't know who was snapping those that night. But and the motivation for going to London was a friend of mine was playing in Hard Rock Calling, and I'm really good friends with his brother, and we were hanging out one night, a couple nights before that Sunday night that we went to the club. And
I mean, your friend has a very famous name. Is it something you feel comfortable mentioning, or?
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, I'm friends with Bon Jovi, and we're good friends with his brother. And I, by default, knowing Matt, I know his brother John, and John was performing over there that weekend, and so we sat down with Matt, and I sat down with his brother a couple nights before, and then Matt and I went out with a couple of other friends, and that particular night we went to, I don't remember the name of the club there in London, and but I think the bar tab might have been a bit exaggerated. I don't know where they got that receipt that I saw online. I mean, I don't ever remember seeing that. I'm not going to say it wasn't a decent number that we spent that night, but it also wasn't just me. It was me and about 14 other friends.
Yeah, well, we all know that the newspapers can certainly make things up. So,
well, I think the club operators had a bit to do with that too. Look, I mean, who had the motivation for blowing that out of proportion? I mean, not me.
Sure.
It was somebody that had something to gain by saying we broke a world record here.
Right.
I don't know. That might be one of your goals, to break world records. I don't know.
You may have. Hey, so it's the articles made it sound like you've been barred in Atlantic City. Now, they're not allowed to bar you, but are they basically refusing your action nowadays?
All of the Caesars properties, and look, they can't bar you, but if they change the rules enough, you're not going to sit down and play.
Those deals, the 20% loss rebate deals, are still available in Las Vegas. Have you played it out there at all?
Yeah, I have played in Vegas, and some of the places still offer the 20%. Yeah, you could work different deals and get decent deals in Vegas and also in Atlantic City with a couple of the properties. But, I mean, Caesars properties have barred me worldwide now, so I can't play at any of their properties. I can play in Atlantic City, but they pull this ridiculous red card out now that I assume they've made for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or whatever special people that says $5 to $50 now. So,
yeah.
You don't go from betting $100,000 a hand to betting $5 to $50 a hand.
Right. It just seems insane to bar you when, I mean, they should still want your action. I mean, if they don't want to give you a rebate, okay, then tell you can't have a rebate. But to just to not want you to play at all seems petty and stupid.
Well, unless they think he has a bigger edge, he has a significant edge in addition to the rebate. Which
they didn't give me reasons other than I've heard that they have different comments in their computer and whatever their reason, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't really care for those people anyway. I think that they make a lot of wrong decisions. I thought that they handled the Watanabe case really poorly. You don't take $120 million from some guy, and when he can't pay you the last 12, try to put him in jail. I just think that those things are, it's just bad form.
Yep.
I
don't know all the details, obviously, of the Watanabe case, but from what I read online and the different news articles, it seemed like Caesars acts like a very heavy-handed organization when it comes to players that they try to pretend that they're friends with. You're friends with them until you may either win too much or you do something that they personally consider intolerable. Now, who in the Caesars organization makes those decisions, I don't know.
Yeah.
Your main business seems to be horse racing somehow related to that. Is that something you can talk about with us? That's
well within
the Gambling with an Edge thing. So how? So do you consider yourself a gambler at horse racing or what?
Well, I work with an individual, and I can't mention his name, but he's probably one of the top four players in the world in horse racing. And my expertise and background all comes from the horse racing industry. I was born into it. I've worked in it my entire life. I was a state regulator, a chief regulator in several states, worked for different governors from Texas to Wyoming, worked for the Oregon Racing Commission, Department of Law Enforcement in Idaho, all regulating horse racing.
You're on the gambler side of that.
Right. Well, I crossed over from becoming a regulator to operating racetracks. I was the president and CEO of a couple of tracks, general manager and corporate director for Philadelphia Park Racetrack in Pennsylvania. And then I finally crossed over to the dark side, I guess the guys call it, and became a gambler. And I find this side to be most interesting, and that's when I met up with the individual that I work with now. My company is a Wyoming-based LLC in corporations, and we primarily focus on PR or the politics of the horse racing industry and trying to get into the different markets all over the globe with the best possible deal that we can get to enter the market. And
the end of the market as what?
As a gambler.
Well, I mean,
we look at the horse racing pool similar to how you look at Wall Street.
Okay.
You're investing in a market. These are all open markets, and you try to negotiate your entry point fees. Now, the lower those fees, the more volume you can afford to put through the market to add. And our view is that we're adding liquidity to those markets rather than taking from those markets. In essence, with us in those pools, the pools are actually better off with us being in there because we size up the recreational player that's in that market. You have different types of players with different types of motivations for being involved in the game. On the left side of the spectrum, you might have, and this is in no level of importance, you've got a completely recreational player. His motivation is just to go out there to be recreational, whether he logs online and has a bet on the ponies or whether he goes to the track in person and bets on the ponies. That recreational player is, if he's a big enough recreational player, is probably entitled to some kind of a rebate in that business too because he's a volume customer. No different than it was 20, 25 years ago. And if that volume customer goes to the track, before we had the age of electronics and the internet and electronic interfaces, that player might stand in a $20 or $50 window. He's not going to stand in a $2 window and bet. So racing and gaming have always given preference to high-level players or high-volume players in some form. It used to be they had to do it physically because everybody had to go to the track. Well, now everybody logs online under their horse player's account, and they can play online into these racing pools.
Don, we're running out of time. We want to thank you for being here. Is there anything you wanted to tell our audience before we let you go?
Hey, it's all still gambling. So, if you're going to do it.
But hopefully it's gambling with an edge.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's gambling with an edge if that's what motivates you. You know, if they're not offering you the right game that you're not comfortable with, then don't do it. You know, we can all just go and watch LSU hopefully win a championship next year, because they blew it for us this year.
Uh-huh. were you rooting for LSU?
Well, actually, I've got a close friend that was rooting for LSU. Unfortunately for him, it didn't work out this year. In fact, very, very embarrassing that they got skunked, but that happens.
Yep, that does happen. Thank you very much, Don. We very much appreciate your time.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
So, Richard, what did we learn tonight?
Well, you know, as always, there's more to the story, the paper, than what the papers made it sound like.
Yeah, it sounded like he was there because of the rebate, but you know, the winning $5 million all at once, that had nothing to do with the rebate. It was just he would when he'd get behind, he'd bail and collect his rebate, and then when he got lucky, he'd keep going until they stopped him.
Right, right, and as he pointed out, you know, if he were playing optimally, he wouldn't have kept playing to get ahead that much in any one session. So it sounds like, you know, in addition to having an edge, he also had some luck.
That's a key part of winning at gambling, that's for sure. The let's pay for our commercials a little bit, and then take up where we left off on scouting.
Okay.
The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else. Double Points is going to be happening this coming Monday, Martin Luther King Day, midnight to midnight. Every day, Sundays through Thursdays, you earn a free swipe when you play 200 points. The high-end prizes are $50 in free play or a $50 Chevron gas card. The low-end prizes are a T-shirt or a coffee mug. There's some intermediate prizes, and one of them is Double Points for that particular day until midnight. So as far as I'm concerned, the Double Point offer is the best one if you're willing to gamble it up and have time and energy and bankroll and knowledge to take advantage of that. I've gotten it twice so far. And got my clock clean, but it is a good opportunity, and if I get it again, I'll stop by there after the show tonight. If I get it again tonight, I'm going to play until midnight. We're having free video poker classes at the South Point. This next week's class is on 9-6 double-double bonus quick quads. This is a 99.65 game, and with a 0.3... cashback 24/7, you're a slight dog. On Double Point days, you have a 0.25% edge plus the mailer. Enjoyment wise, it is my favorite game, although I would I'll play a change machine with a big enough edge. So my favorite game now is which one pays the most, but if other things are equal, quick quads is the most fun. When you hit a quick quad, which means like 10, 10, 10, 7, 3, where the 7 plus the 3 equals the 10, that counts as 4 tens, the machine gives a quick quads, which is quite exciting when it's happening on your machine and only a little bit annoying when it's happening on your neighbors. The Palms. January, the Palms has introduced a senior program called Sterling Advantage for those of us 50 years and older. I personally have that one covered. Benefits include $4 movie tickets, half off 24/7 cafe in the buffet, and they have scratch cards, and each scratch card gives a variety of things. Today I got $3 free slot play, which I was not thrilled about. I was hoping for Double Points. A certain number of people are getting Double Points, and that was what I was really hoping for, because there is a drawing, and I'll be participating in the drawing tomorrow night and the following night. And so Double Points until midnight would have been money in the bank for me, because it's far better EV playing on Double Points than it is on Single Points. The drawings are 7 o'clock Friday and Saturday. You need to be there to win, and... if you're a female, you have a minute and a half to go up and identify yourself. If you're a guy, you only get 90 seconds. And the tickets stay in the barrel for both nights. And after Saturday night, they throw it away, and then you start earning tickets for next week. Play, Earn, and Win, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's themed Keep It Warm for the first half of the month, which ends tomorrow. And that's you earn kind of patio heater, bathrobes, gloves, things to get you all snuggly. And starting Monday, they call it Booze Cruise, and it's alcohol. And their buffet has recently gone through a major upgrade, more hot food stations, and more fresh sauces. All right, that's the Palms. Now, before Don showed up on the line, we were talking about scouting. Now, you were telling us on table games, which is where you do your scouting, you're looking at every single game and closely and all kinds of things. For video poker, a lot of it is pay schedules. And so you have to check out the pay schedules. Now, that was relatively easy to do in the good old days when it was one game per machine. Now there can be 40 games on one machine where, you know, four or five different denominations and 10 or 12 games per denomination. And it can take 5 minutes to go through one machine. And they have, you know, more than 1,000 video poker machines in a casino. So this is a tedious process.
Well, not only that, you have to know what you're looking for as well.
Well, that's for sure.
And to know all those games, I mean, and know the pay table on every one of those games, I mean, that's a lot.
it is. There's a certain amount of knowledge you need. That knowledge is actually summarized in my book, Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner. And so every game is listed. So like on Double Double Bonus, it will tell you what the 10-6 is worth and what the 9-6 is worth and what the 9-5 is worth. And on Super Double Bonus, what these are worth. And on Triple Double Bonus and whatever. So there's like 60-some games, and they're all listed in all the pay schedules, which is not to say you still don't have to go practice, but identifying the right machine is part of it. So you have to have – so none of us know all those games. So I probably play 8 to 10 games, different games at a professional level, and can get up to speed on lots more quickly. But just go into a casino and sit down and play essentially perfectly just 8 or 10 different games, something like that. I can recognize many others. Now, VP Free 2, that's a website, vpfree2.com, list the best games in every casino. That is a good place to start. If I were going to a Tunica because, say, Shirley has some relatives in Memphis, which she does, and I might be spending 2 or 3 days in Tunica, I would check out VP Free 2 to find out what are the best games in Tunica. However, if I live there, this would not be close to good enough. The players who...
Not only that, there's a danger in that, and the same thing happens with people who swear by Wong has a newsletter called Current Blackjack News.
Mm-hmm.
And the danger is, you know, let's say that I'm going to Albuquerque and I look up what the games are there. Well, a lot of people will find what they think is the best game in the newsletter, and they'll go to that casino, look for that game, find that game, sit down and play, and then they never do the scouting. And right three tables over, there could be, you know, a pile of gold sitting there that you never find because you went and saw that the game, you know, the game in the newsletter was, you know, there.
Correct.
So you still have to scout, even though that.
But if somebody has like 10 hours to play in Memphis and they're on a particular weekend and they're flying back home, they're going to scout relatively little. Now, if they're going to be there for a long time, well, yeah, you scout more. Now, frequently you can, a whole bank of machines, you assume that they're all the same. So you check out a particular machine in the denominations that are interesting to you, and then you assume the others are the same. Now, that's a shortcut that is, you do that and you miss the one mistake on the fourth machine over that the slot director doesn't even know about.
Right, and you know, here's another big difference. If you miss something, you know, maybe it's a machine with a slightly better payback that might be worth, I don't know, several thousand dollars or something. I could miss something that literally is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, you know, by not finding a particular game, it could cost me six figures.
Wow. Okay. So most of us, most of our listeners, are not playing for stakes where that's a possibility. But also in scouting, more than the pay schedules in video poker, it's the promotions, where this month, you know, 4/8 pay an extra 500 coins or whatever the promotion is. Now, if you're a member of the slot club, then you've received a mailer and it'll tell you what's coming up. But if you're not a member of this particular casino, you don't know what that is. And so you kind of have to go to the booth and check it out and ask questions and read the signs and blah, blah, blah. So,
now, this is true for table game players as well. And again, you know, places will have promotions where they just don't realize how much they're giving away. And again, you know, these can be worth six figures. So finding out about promotions is another really important part of scouting.
And in video poker, it's also, if you're a big enough player, it's important to cultivate a host and take care of that host. Now, a host at one property, Shirley and I picked up airfare for him and his wife and two kids to fly back and forth from Vegas to Seattle last week. This was more than $1,000 that we paid for. And this has come back manyfold, where he finds out things and he shares with us, or he finds a way to give it to us.
So it sounds like you're involved in politics.
taking care of your host is important. Now, if you're a nickel or a quarter player, there's very little a host can do for you. But if you're a big enough player, the care and feeding of a host is an important part of the game. Now, there's an article on Calvin Ayres. Actually, I don't think we have time to get into that. Who are we looking at for next week? And what is the percentage likelihood that he's actually going to show up?
Well, next week is supposed to be Daniel Negreanu. I haven't had an email in a few weeks from him, so I've sent one out to confirm that he's on for next week. But that is the plan. The plan is that it's Daniel Negreanu. If he's
one of the most popular poker players out there.
He is. And if for some reason he isn't available, our backups would be either Josh Axelrad, who wrote Repeat Until Rich, or Johnny C., who ran the MIT team.
Uh-huh. Well, good. All three worthy guests. Good. All right. So we have like a minute to go. If you wanted to find good gambling information, if our readers did, what would be some of the websites that you keep up to, you check out periodically?
Well, one of them is calvinayer.com. Calvin Ayer was the guy who founded Bodog, and I think he thinks of himself as a cross between Hugh Hefner and James Bond. But he has a really good website that has, you know, tons of gambling information every single day. You know, it's like a news clip service. About gambling.
So that's calvinayer.com. What Ayer is spelled A-Y-R-E?
Yes. And I just found a new thing this week that's really great called Trap It. That's trap.it. Trap It. And it is It's like a clip service where you tell it the subjects you're interested in, and it goes out and finds news stories from around the world every single day and catalogs them for you.
Is this a pay service, or is this
free? No, it's completely free.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a great thing. Trap it. Check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, good. All right. So we're down to about 30 seconds.
Let me just tell you one of the reasons why I find that so important, reading all that stuff.
Before you do, 5 seconds.
Oh, five. Go hit
three.
Lots of royal flushes.
That's it. Lots of royal flushes. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.